Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of experience experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. I'm David Ponder.
I'm Zach Schaefer.
And today we're talking about a very interesting subject, because it's probably one of the most written about subjects that I can think of.
And everyone, it affects each of us in two ways.
In two ways for each of us. And I would say everyone who does this activity or is this thing is constantly looking for guidance, constantly trying to improve themselves.
And constantly striving for perfection or like the best way to do it.
You're right.
As if that exists.
You're right. And I'm just constantly afraid of doing it wrong, making mistakes. And we got to say what we're talking about here. We're talking about parenting.
Being a parent.
Okay. So, look, as usual, I'm going to start off with a definition. This one's from Wikipedia, actually.
Well, can we throw out a quick disclaimer? Because we talk so much about parenting on this, which is important because it's part of our lives, and it is what it is. But we realize there's probably some of you out there that listen that don't have kids or are not going to have kids. So, you might not find this one as enjoyable, but I think it's important, and you're at least around kids. So, while you might not have to parent, you're around kids, so hopefully you can find some value out of this as well.
And I would say everyone has connections with other people. We're going to be talking about basically connections with other people and giving to other people in a caring way, right?
Yeah, and I think people without kids shortchange themselves sometimes, because sometimes people with kids, they want to hear and just get a perspective from somebody else who doesn't have kids. Just let me know what you see when I'm with my kids, because they're a total blank slate.
I absolutely think you're right. And I almost think there's a trepidation on the part of people without kids to give their opinion because they feel, I don't know, unqualified or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
But yeah, you almost have to go out of your way to solicit that feedback.
You sometimes. Do have to, because yeah. All of them aren't giving it. Anyway, I didn't mean to derail your definition. Head back to it.
It's okay. You know, so I was talking a little bit about, basically giving to others in a caring way. This says parenting or child rearing is the process of promoting and supporting the physical, emotional, social, and intellectual development of a child from infancy to adulthood. So, and it basically says it's not necessarily related to the biological relationship. I agree with that 100%. I would say that definition, if we're talking about giving in a caring way to others, can be the only part of that definition that is specific to parenting is from infancy to adulthood, you know?
Yeah.
You can do all those things to other people at any point in time, give in a physical, social,
right,
and intellectual way and help them develop.
Well, then what about adoption? What about somebody that adopts somebody that's not an infant?
That's, You're a parent. Yeah, absolutely a parent. I don't think that this is saying that it has to start at infancy.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, you remember my old joke when I was probably, in my early 20s, and I said, yeah, I want to have kids. I want to adopt a fully grown, I think at the time I had said Asian man, because they were good at math and engineering, who can support me and my family, and he'll be my son.
Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Well, I made a point. And it's at the top of the whiteboard over there. And I think it ties into this chronology you just mentioned from infancy to adulthood. And the word is evolves or evolution. And it's really at three different levels for parenting. Our kids, especially when they're young, are evolving rapidly, just rapidly. But at the same time, we are also evolving. Our life circumstances change. Our life goals change. Maybe we have health issues or we get healthier after we had health issues. Life just happens and we can't control that. And then the third level, which is much bigger, which but absolutely affects how we parent, right or wrong, is the world. and the society we live in and the norms that are accepted for what a good parent should be doing, where a good parent sends their kid to school, what's expected of you when you're in public and you have your kids, how should you be working with them, dealing with them, controlling them, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's interesting you talk about the norms that are expected of parents. That's a very important thing that I think we need to talk about.
Sure.
Also, it's tough as a parent, the norms that are generational that may be different for your children growing up. You know, they are going to have different norms that you don't relate to. And it's really tough not to, you know, force your norms onto them or look negatively at the norms for the generation in which they're
born. Interesting. I want to jump in here. I just started thinking about, you triggered it. Did my mom or dad, who are both 10 years apart, by the way, audience, my dad is 70, he'll be 74, my mom will be 64 this year. So he's part of the traditional generation, actually. He's pre-baby boomer. She's right in the heart of baby boomer. But neither one of them, looking back, ever said, well, when I was a kid, this is how it was. I don't remember that statement one time. They wholly embraced the craziness. And when we were young, my brother and I and Dave and Justin, it was all about sports, playing all just organized sports year round, multiple teams for single sports at the same time, club sports, select sports. They dove into our interests and our lives and supported us. And they didn't romanticize this version of their childhood and how we should have the same childhood they had. Shit, if anything, my dad specifically didn't want us to have the same childhood he had. Not that he had a bad one, but he had to work a lot.
I love that you bring that up, and it's something that I hadn't thought about. And I would also say, as you're listening to this episode, if you don't have kids, think about your childhood and your parents,
yeah,
because this is a perfect place to reflect.
How did they parent you?
But what you were saying there, my dad always told great stories.
Yeah.
He is a good storyteller. He has a really good memory about his childhood.
He does. Details from his stories. What people were wearing.
I mean, it's amazing. And he tells the stories the same way every time. It's really great. And I feel like some of those stories were fuel for our mischievousness. Like if anyone's ever read our book that we've written, Friendship LLC, I mean, some of the stuff that I did was basically just trying to have as much fun as I know my dad had as a kid. Because
yeah, you're right. I guess I never thought about that. Maybe in my head it wasn't that connection, but it was the implicit acceptance that, well, hey, he did some crazy stuff. Shit, we should do it too.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it.
That's funny.
And when you say didn't romanticize, because we're talking about norms, generational mm-hmm. norms, not only did my dad not romanticize them, he would go out of his way to point out problems that they had, even though it was the 50s and the 60s. And, you know, obviously TV romanticizes the 50s as some sort of golden moral age in America where everybody was perfect. My dad would go out of his way to say people didn't talk about stuff that needed to be talked about. The problems still existed. People just didn't talk about them and didn't admit them. And that was a worse way to live. And he went out of his way to say there were certain things in his life that he didn't learn about because his parents or his teachers taught him it. He had to learn it the hard way by experiencing it. And he said, I don't want you to have to go through that. And I really respect him for that. I love that.
Yeah, I think there's two main ways that the average person talks about their childhood or how they were parented. And it tends to be through rose-colored glasses, or it tends to be through I walked up a hill both to and from school kind of thing. And this generation has it so easy. And there's a little bit of that as we get older. And as one of my jobs is a college professor. So I think being around young people, I'm about 10 to 15 years older than most of my students. They keep me young and make sure I don't slip into that mantra, because I can feel myself slipping into it sometimes, but they pull me back. And that's really nice for me, because then that helps me then when I come into my house with my 5-year-old and my 2-year-old, they're just going to grow up very differently than I did. They might not be able to ride their bikes across town like Dave and I did. I mean, over highways and do these things and be gone for 8 hours a day. No connection. Parents have no clue where we're at, but that's okay. We live in a different time and I can't control that. So it is what it is.
Yeah, the norms that we're going to have to deal with as parents versus the norms that our parents dealt with are going to be quite different. And to me, in my head, I romanticize some of the norms that my parents had, specifically being things like us at 12 years old being out of the house for at least 8 hours at a time without ever checking in. If my mom and dad wanted to know where I were at, they would have to start calling around friends' houses.
Or driving around. They used to have to drive around. We'd be on our rollerblades.
To try to find us.
Miles away.
But they weren't freaking out while they were doing it, you know?
Or they weren't assuming that
the worst
we got shot or something bad happened.
Whereas today, if you can't find your kid in 5 minutes, then
they put out an Amber Alert.
Right. And so that's going to be tough.
Okay, let's summarize it in one statement. They used to worry about finding us to bring us back for dinner. Now we're having conversations about, well, at what age should I buy Claudia a cell phone? I mean, is five the right age? Is she ready for a cell phone? And we convince ourselves, well, it's for her safety. I need to be able to find her. You know, well, why don't I just microchip her? I just got my dog neutered yesterday and I microchipped him. Why don't I just microchip her? That'd be much easier because then I constantly know where she's at. So my point is, We're driven by fear on that. We're driven by what we believe and see in the media, and they're a fear-driven business. They're in the business of inciting fear.
Yeah, you're right. When we talked about everything about parenting as far as wanting to read as much as we can read and be as good as we can be and not make mistakes, it's all fear-driven, which is not the, I don't think that's a place to parent from.
No, it's not the place to live as a human from.
That's a good point. Yeah, I would say all of these things are true. We've touched on a lot of stuff. What I'll say about that, about living from a place of fear, is I feel like your kids, they see and they inherit a lot more from you than you think. It's not just the words you say. It's the way that you say them and the context in which you say them. It's the body language you use when you say them. And it's also the things that you do before and after you say those words. They're really smart. Kids are a lot smarter than you give them credit for. And so if you're teaching them from a place of fear, they're going to inherit that. You know, they're going to inherit those traits and that fear. Oh, it's like that, what is it, Mother by Pink Floyd?
Yes.
Where the line is, Mama's going to put all of her fears into you.
That phrase I just wrote.
Wow.
Parents know how to push our buttons, and we know how to push our kids' buttons because we put the buttons there based on our fears and insecurities. That's weird that you just went there.
Yeah, I didn't even read what he had written across the room. But yeah, I mean, that line in that song resonates with me as something that I don't want to do to my children. I mean, it's impossible not to in some way, but at least if I keep it in the forefront of my mind when I'm trying to teach them lessons and everything. That's another thing that I think our parents were really good at doing is they would teach us lessons, but behind every lesson, I can remember your dad, my dad, especially saying, you know, it's about having fun and it's about like being happy. And we want to teach you these things so that you don't have to go through hardships that we had, but really because we want you to be a happy person. We want to make your childhood fun and happy. So,
yeah, that's very important. Now, we've mentioned... Ah, thank you, Kizzy. My wife, Kizzy, just brought us some eggs that she made for us.
Speaking of parenting.
Yes.
Speaking of treating someone with
all,
love.
An all-star parent right there. Right. Elizabeth Jean Schaefer.
She is an all-star.
She is. We could do a whole episode on how people should parent the way she does. We were on a different topic. I was going to share something. That's okay. We can come back to it.
Fear. Mama's going to put all her fears into you.
Yeah. Oh, we've talked a lot about our dads, and so I wanted to mention something. So while growing up, my parents were divorced, and when we were with dad, we had a lot of freedom when we lived with dad or stayed with dad. My dad lived across the street from Dave's parents. That's how we met. If you don't know, buy the book Friendship LLC, Amazon, $11.99.
Yeah.
But when we were with mom, you know, that was the real household that we lived in. But, you know, when we were with mom, it was like a normal house. We had chores and we had things to do, and she kept it running. Looking back, she didn't sit down and teach us, like, structured lessons, more like my dad tried to. She just was a leader by example. She was, she parented by example. Now, so now looking back and seeing the, of the responsibilities, stresses, and duties of a two-parent household, I am absolutely amazed at what my mom accomplished as a one-parent household, and not just doing a good job raising me and Josh, and people tell her that she did that all the time, but just she's successful. She was able to retire really young. She did well for herself financially, you know, and she loves life. She's fulfilled. She's happy, and she did it alone, and I don't know how she did it.
Yeah, we should talk to your mom at some point, because she's an amazing example of someone who had a more challenging parenting situation than most, mm-hmm. in the fact that, you know, you and Josh got to go to your dad's and have freedom.
He was like a friend.
Yeah, I mean, but he definitely was like a mentor and a guide and very loving.
Yes.
But when it came to being a disciplinarian, he was not. And your mom had to sort of be the yin to that yang, you know what I mean? And she did so in such an amazing way that you and Josh just turned out really great. So she would be a really good person. And like you said, she's fulfilled. She's financially successful. What she accomplished is really something that's amazing. And I would say what we're talking about here is important, because we're talking about parenting as a whole, like the whole parent, not just the part of you that cares for your kids, but you and yourself caring for yourself, right? So it's like the whole idea of being on an airplane and there being an accident on the airplane and the air masks drop. What do they tell you? You have to put yours on first before you care for your kids. Because if you don't put your air mask on first, you're going to pass out and you won't be able to help your kid, right? Yep. And so parents have to first take care of themselves, put themselves in a stable position, and be in a good spot for themselves to really be able to give to their kids. And I don't think enough parents really think about that on a day-to-day basis. Like, you have to take care of yourself from a mental, physical, spiritual, all of those things, so that you can be the best mom, dad you can be for your kid.
I agree. And one of the most important lessons I learned when I was doing domestic and divorce mediations in Texas was that you need to love yourself first. If you have kids, you need to put your relationship with your spouse second, and then your kids. What often happens is financial troubles, the number one reason people get divorced, but then it's child rearing differences, because one of the parents usually then focuses all their energy on the kids at the expense of the relationship. Now, obviously, we could add in, if you believe in God and higher power, you know, that should be very high for you. But not everyone does. But it's interesting, even with parents that are on the same page most of the time, if one of the parents is giving way all the energy to the kids and sacrificing a little bit of time and intimacy, and not just sex, just hanging out and quality time, that affects the kids. Because then the kids, there's going to be tension, friction, disagreement, maybe conflict. The kids pick up on that. So going back to your comment that kids are smart, I was at an AA meeting yesterday, and a guy was talking about, you know, his over his 30 years of drinking, how smart his very young kids were, and talking about making amends to people, which is step eight. Step eight's making the list, step nine's making amends. And he goes, I have had to make amends to my kids for years. He goes, it just amazes me the things that they remember that I did 20 years ago, and they were 6, 7, 8 years old. They're blank slates. And he goes, and it was fantastic because they gave me unfiltered feedback about what my real behaviors were like when I was drinking. And most adults won't do that. They'll filter it. But kids don't, because they don't know those norms and expectations and polite management and civility and all that stuff.
You know, yeah, it's important that you say that, because the feedback that you get from others is the mirror from which you improve.
Right.
Or don't improve, but it's the mirror from which you build your self-image. And kids are, yeah, they're an unfiltered mirror. It's amazing the things that Marin will say, you know, like, why are you doing that, Daddy? She'll call, you know, call me out in the middle of some activity. Why are you doing that? And I have to, like, explain to her. And sometimes it's like, no good reason. No, I shouldn't be doing this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you looking at on your phone? So, stuff like that, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, you're right, babe. I need to put this down. I should be giving you attention in this moment. And kids are great for that. So, yeah, that being said, if we're talking about taking care of yourself first, then taking care of relationships, and then taking care of your kids, and then spirituality and whatever. I can think back and realize when I'm trying to avoid certain parenting, certain negative behaviors or traits as a parent, I can think back, and I always relate it to other kids who I knew there was something wrong with the way they were being parented. And you saw the outcome in the child, right? So, like everything, I believe that there is a spectrum. And when you talk about being like the classic one, are you going to be a real authoritarian and disciplinarian, or are you going to be very lax with your kids? Which is better, you know? I've seen it go bad on both sides, you know? And I couldn't, obviously I'm not going to name names on the podcast, but after this, Zach, you know, I could name names to you, and I know we would agree where there were kids whose parents were both way too lenient, who ended up, you know, having real life problems as a result of it. And then on the flip side, parents that were way too strict, who ended up rebelling and lying to their parents and literally just being a different person than their parents thought that they were. And I think that just, like, they never had a real relationship with their parents because of that. And so I can see those ends of the spectrum and see what I don't want to do as a parent, you know, kind of use them as bumpers, so to speak, and be like, I need to be somewhere in the middle here. Now, that said, it's really interesting trying to be on the same page with your partner, right? If you're rearing children with a partner, Lauren and I often, in a situation, like, Rin's having a bad bedtime, right? It's whoever takes the lead first kind of sets the tone of how it's going to be handled that evening. And then we try just not to contradict each other, you know? But there have been times where, you know, we're tired or in bad moods or whatever, and whoever took the lead first, it doesn't appear that that strategy is working in that present time. And then the other person is like, let me do this. I'm just going to do this my way, like whatever. And we step on each other. Marin sees that. And when we talk about kids being smart,
and plays into
she
it.
She latches on to
yeah,
that.
Of course.
And tries to like use it to her advantage.
Separate you. Absolutely. Leverage.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. I'm sure not in the moment, but it shows true social learning.
It does. It does. And it shows you that kids are a mirror, right? So not just to yourself, but to your relationship and how you're working with your partner.
I want to take it a totally different direction, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Let's go a little bit darker. Let's go dark.
Ooh.
What about parents and our culture? I don't have TV, but I'm for a while there were a lot of these shows on focusing on parents and their kids. And parents getting their kids involved in things. And so the phrase that comes to my mind is vicarious visions. Parents that want to live vicariously through their kids because perhaps they didn't get to achieve the goals they wanted to or live the life they wanted to. But now they've got this little person that they can guide into arenas that they wanted to be in themselves. And one of the areas that I personally believe this happens a lot are those child beauty pageants. Those are creepy. I'm sorry, they're creepy.
That's an egregious example, and it's true. It goes back to not taking care of yourself and not loving yourself first. If you don't feel fulfilled as a person, then when you're giving all your time, energy to your children, like I'm sure it becomes tempting to try and fill the hole that you had through them. I think that's what's going
on. Yeah,
there.
Obviously. But I didn't want to just throw those people under the bus because I'm sure there's some just genuine people out there doing that. I don't understand it. That culture doesn't resonate with me. But I wanted to turn the mirror on myself. So I started thinking, well, how am I doing this or how am I trying to set it up so that happens? And I thought, well, my kids are going to be good at math money and they're going to be good with computer science math. Whether they like it or not, those two things are happening 100% in the Schaefer household. They're getting extra tutoring on all that stuff. I don't care if they like it or not. They're going to be experts for their age in those two things.
Money math, you mean?
Money math and just computer science, the idea of understanding computer science, coding. So is that me because I didn't get those things from a young age? And I'm like, well, now I've got the chance for them to get it. Or is it because what I'm convincing myself that that's where the world's going? Those are the future skills that people need, specifically on the computer science math side. You know, that's what I've convinced myself of. But maybe there's a part of me, it's like, well, you know, I could have been an engineer. I could have been this finance guy or whatever, you know. Perhaps that's there. But maybe that's just a more acceptable way for normal parents to be like, well, yeah, but that's okay because those are good skills. Is it? Is it that different than the parents forcing their kids in the beauty pageants? I don't know.
It's different because it's way more acceptable and it's way less out there. And it's seen as quote unquote productive.
Or sports, forcing your kids into sports, the sports you wanted to play.
I would also say, though, those two things will help your children be quote unquote successful, well-adjusted children versus the pageanting stuff. I don't see that how that helps some kid in life. I'm sure they make up some I'm sorry if you're a pageant person here. I'm sure that's, oh no, it teaches them to be good sports when they lose, and it teaches them camaraderie with the other contestants. I'm sure it. Okay, you know, but you can get that with soccer or baseball, whatever your kid's interested in.
Thumb wrestling.
You know, how about this? How about this as a question? So I see that too. Like, I think being introspective as parents, you see the biases, the things that you want your kids to be into and your kids to learn and do well. And so one of the things that we're trying to do is offer Marin and Dylan a menu, like basically trying to expose them to many different things and kind of see what sticks, you know what I mean? Throw a bunch of stuff up on the wall and see what sticks. So we're doing the typical thing right now where we're already trying to rotate activities with Marin. So she's been in swim class, trying to get her to go to some dance classes. We're going to get her in t-ball. We're going to have her play soccer, you know, while she's young. And I think the thing that I'm going to have to take forward in this is to not try to push my own preferences on. Of course, I would be thrilled if Dylan and Marin love softball, baseball, because I played baseball when I was a kid and I was really passionate about it. But I have to try to avoid that. Another thing is, when you said money math, you want your kids to be really skilled at money math. I share that. And I think the reason is because you and I are at a point in life now, if you guys go listen to the money episode, where to me, one of the things that I think about most now is how we're on a debt hamster wheel and trying to get off of it. And like, you know, it's kind of a pervasive thread throughout all the things that I'm doing in my life, right? So why am I working so hard? Why am I trying to save as much money as I can? Why am I trying to do, you know, build a business and all of these things? Really all comes back to trying to get off the debt hamster wheel, because I really believe then that's where true freedom lies, when you are able to choose what you can do with your time. And so I want my children to have that freedom as well. And if I think I have a bias towards money math too, because I want them to learn that lesson and think that way before they get themselves in a bunch of student debt or before they go out and take a big mortgage because they think they have to have that college degree to enjoy life and be successful. Or they have to, you know, it's good debt if you take out a mortgage and go several hundred thousand dollars in debt. That's quote unquote good debt, right? When they both lead to the same point, which is being on the debt hamster wheel. But I have that viewpoint, and I'm going to push that viewpoint onto my children. And I think what you're saying here is we have to be introspective and say, do we need to push that onto our children?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to say that I think the pageants are fucking ridiculous. But am I being as ridiculous and I'm 100% serious. They're going to be forced to understand money, math, and coding. And that's going to happen. And it might get ugly at times, but that's happening. Claudia and Ben, when they're 12, they're going to get those things. Whether they like it or not and pursue it for a career, I don't care. To me, I view those two things 100% as equal as knowing how to read the English language.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you can always test out something like that by taking it to, what is it, ad absurdum?
Mm-hmm.
Take it to its extreme and see if it holds water. So I would say no, because you can think about the skills that a child has to have. No one would be critical of a parent who says, my kids are going to read. They have to read.
Right.
Like, there is no way. You know, there was a time when that wasn't.
Yeah, there was a choice.
There was a time when the majority of the population was illiterate, and there were parents out there that said, my children are going to read.
But then there were also parents saying, we are 100% by choice not going to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Or I'm going to let my kid decide if they're interested in reading. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
And so I would say that there are probably core skills that will allow your child to be better adjusted to the society and the framework and the rules in which they're going to have to live. And no, I don't think it's a bad idea as a parent to prioritize those. Pageanting, I don't think, is high on that list.
Yeah. What about this, the struggle, the idea that while we had a very comfortable upbringing, you know, we were, I know what I'd label myself, but I don't know how you'd label your experience. Even though we were both similar, I'd label myself upper, lower, middle class is how I label myself growing up.
Yeah.
We're definitely not upper class. I guess some people could just say straight middle class, okay. But then there's the experience, you know, that my dad really struggled with money for a long time. We didn't have power at my dad's house for years. That to me ain't middle class. That's lower class. But you didn't have that experience. I know you participated in it with me, but it wasn't your parent is my point.
No, that's right. We grew up in a very blue collar town. I would call it blue collar.
Yeah.
My dad, you know, was a mechanic at a power plant. My mom worked at a local company doing insurance type related stuff.
So here's my point with the struggle.
Yeah, I would say I'll say split right down the middle class.
Okay, yeah, I would agree for you. But for me, I got to put myself down a little bit, not in a bad way, but just because my dad had some struggles for a while and he overcame them. Anyway, my point is this. What we learned in that upbringing is the importance of hard work, work ethic, the German work ethic, the Protestant work ethic, whatever. Work hard. Now I've transformed that, and yes, still work hard and long, but try to work smart is how I've changed that. But my point is this. Where I see a lot of parents, and I want your opinion on this, Dave, is we're going through this struggle, even though it's fun along the way, and there's plenty of joy, but, you know, we work a lot of hours. But to set our kids up so they don't have to do the same thing. So following that, my logic is, well, have I liked my life? No, I've loved my life. If I died tomorrow, I don't want to die tomorrow, but would I be happy with the decision I made? 100%, absolutely. I feel I've created a good legacy and been surrounded by love and tried to give off love. So if I want to remove from my kids the idea of any kind of struggle that I myself helped me become who I am, that's just weird to me.
Mm.
And I know people that are our age that are extremely financially successful, two people in particular, they don't want to really even participate in like raising their kids. They want to outsource the raising of their kids to professionals, as they say. And they want to make sure their kid never has to struggle. And I'm just thinking, that's just weird to me. If you are so confident and you think you've become this person of status and fulfillment and success, why would the very things that made you that person, you wouldn't want to help instill that in your kids?
It's a really great point. And I'll say, I'll relate it down to what I'm experiencing on a daily basis with Marin. She'll fall down and scrape her knee, right? That hurts. That sucks. She'll cry about it for way too long if I'm around. If she doesn't see me around, she'll cry about it, and then I'll observe her, you know, from inside the house looking through a window or something, and she'll get over it fairly quickly. But if I'm there, then it becomes a waterworks, and she wants me to pick her up and lay her head on my shoulder for way too long and cry for way too long. It's really just that she wants attention. She wants, you know, warmth, stability, all this stuff. And in that instance, I can tell that I am a crutch for her. Now, when we talk about struggle, I don't know if it's going to be work and all these things. To me, I think of it from an East, or I try to think of it from a more of an Eastern perspective, where it doesn't matter what your situation is financially or otherwise, life is always a struggle. That's why everyone is trying to achieve happiness and good emotions. You know, we've talked in the past and said, your life is just a sum of the way that you felt, how you feel on a daily basis. That's what your life is. So I would say to those people who are very financially successful, like, good luck removing struggle from your kids, because if it ain't in the financial arena, it's going to be elsewhere, and it could be in an area that's way worse.
Emotional, relational level.
Yeah. I mean, Zach, you went and interviewed multimillionaires, 100 millionaires, and billionaires, and you told me there was a common thread. What was that common thread when it came to parenting and their family life?
Well, you put it into your words, and then I'll tell you.
Basically, regret. Yeah. They all seem to have regret about the way that they parented and the way that their children turned out. I mean, I remember you telling a story about one of them who said, if I could go back and do it over again, I'd give the money away.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there were some powerful comments. And again, there could always be a performance factor there too, right? Those people are smart. They know the right things to say when they're being recorded on an interview that can end up in a book. They don't want to say, fuck yeah, I love money. I loved it more when my kids were little. I love it more now, and I'm going to take that shit to the grave. Peace.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, who knows? But they did say these things, to be honest. Yeah. To me, though, the way I think about it, I want my kids to struggle. There. It is. I said it. I want my kids to struggle. I set up small ways in my head, like the scrape. That's perfect. In my head, the way I view it when that happens is just like, okay, don't comfort, don't overcomfort. Don't overcomfort. Be enough to show love, but don't go over the top, because to me, that's just setting up self-pity and victimhood. And I don't, and I'm way too sharp, but luckily I married the right woman who brings in the love. So between Kizzy and I, we have great balance. If they had to grow up with Zach Schaefer, single parent, oh my God, watch out for those Schaefer kids. They would be either going to jail because they'd be rebelling, or I don't know. But luckily I have that balance of love and compassion that... Mine is just a different type of love and compassion.
Well, and I think what you're saying is you don't want your kids to struggle just for the sake of struggling.
No, struggle to learn.
You want them to struggle so that they can get comfortable being uncomfortable, right? So that they can embrace the struggle, so to speak, because life is that. And I'll say it this way, like, I don't want my kids to have to endure pain, you know, as little of pain as my kids have to endure throughout life. That's what I endure throughout life. That's what I want them to do. What I want them to be good at is being introspective and understand when they're down in it, right? So there are moments in life, just like that Nine Inch Nails song, I was up above it, now I'm down in it. Mm-hmm. There are moments in life where you're up above it. You're looking down, everything feels good.
You're enlightened.
And then there's moments in life where you are down in it, man. Like, you are fighting something, you are working through something, and you are working hard. You're in the struggle. I don't care if it's because you got some crappy job that you don't like and you're sweeping a floor somewhere and your boss sucks, or if because you're dealing with a relationship problem, or it doesn't matter. There's struggles wherever you're going to go. I want my kids to be self-aware enough to understand when they're down in it and know there will be a time when they're up above it again. And while they're down in it, this is their time to take something out of that experience and to realize it's like the damn Viktor Frankl quote I keep going back to, which is like, for every action, basically, you get to choose your reaction. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I want my kids to be able to embrace the struggle, but I don't want them to have to unnecessarily struggle either.
Well, I agree, but we live in a very middle-class lifestyle currently. So there's nothing, they're not going, unless nuclear war happens, they're not going to ever experience a really difficult struggle. My kids aren't going to grow up without power in this house like I did. That's just not going to happen. So that, I believe in a middle-class lifestyle. We got on Facebook, I can buy 10 million little gadgets to make my life better. To me, it's just horse shit. Like, my kids are going to grow up in such a world to where so many opportunities exist. It's just like such a level of comfort that I need them to understand the importance of digging holes
Yeah.
Doing something difficult and understanding. You always talk about they need to know how hard it is to make a dollar. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Or how hard it is to teach someone a lesson if they don't want to understand the lesson, but they know it's good for that person.
It's weird. There's a dichotomy we're talking about here for me. Because I want them to be able to embrace the struggle and understand how hard it is to make a dollar on one hand. And then on the other hand, I want them to be able to walk through doors of opportunity from a place where they don't have an anchor holding them down, right? They don't have fear. They don't have debt obligations that prevent them from walking through a door of opportunity that perhaps you or I wouldn't be able to walk through, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to make this how we make our living, for so to speak.
Sure.
You know, anything. You come up with anything. I would like... So there's a dichotomy there. And it's going to be hard for me to achieve that with them. I fully understand that.
Yeah. No, but I like... We got to set ideals, right? So I think it's... Okay, here's a quote I just read. I'm reading a book called Breathing Underwater. Fantastic book. It's about infusing the 12 steps of AA just into daily life, even if you're not an addicted person. And it's really well done. But at one point, by a guy named Richard Rohr. And at one point, he says, the United States is a culture with an extremely rapid growing population of elderly people, but the elders pass down very little wisdom to the next generations. And this is an old guy. He's in his 70s or 80s. So he's critiquing himself as well. That's really interesting to me. I see that. I see how the United States treats old people. We put them in a home. Even if it's a really, really nice home, they don't stay in our families like many other countries. A village raises a child. An extended family, not just an extended family, but a whole community of people raise kids, not in the U.S. It's two-parent households in the U.S. I raise my kids. You don't tell me. Even our extended family, it's almost how we treat them at times. What's interesting to me is this. I see that. I don't see a lot of true wisdom, life narratives, morals being taught intergenerationally in the United States as a whole. And I find that extremely problematic. So one of my goals, I always ask myself, when my kids are 20, what do I want them to say if a friend asks them, hey, what are your guys' family traditions? Or what were your rituals? What wisdom and lessons did you get taught that were really important? And so I've started integrating those things that I want my kids to talk about into my life. And I'm very mechanical about it because that's how I am with everything. But that's important to me. I want my kids to have the traditions that I want. I got to create them. I just can't think about them. And so I've had to start adding these things in and be very disciplined, not just me, but Kizzy and myself, with how we're doing them. Because at the end of the day, we learn through story.
So how do you want your kids to respond to that question? That's an awesome question.
I have a whole list. I don't want to get into it all, but I'll give you a couple things. Family dinners, where there's real connection. So we've created a whole list of questions to talk about, not just how was your day. What was the most important thing you learned today? That's a fun one. Did you have a conflict today? How'd you deal with that? So I always share if my dad messed up or fucked up or something went wrong, I always talk about here's how I responded. Did I like it or not? How could I have done it different? And they don't get it. They're 5 and 2. Ben, clearly, he's throwing applesauce at me. But Claudia, like, at least listens along and then, okay, turn on some music. But I'm making that a tradition. Another thing we do is on Sundays, we try to do some kind of moral discussion together. I have it right there, right? The Schaefer family mass up there. So morals, action, and social support. Because we're not religious people, but we are spiritual people. We don't go to a church, but I know all of that you get out of church and belonging to a religion is very important. So we're trying to take some of that, what I believe is action-oriented, helping other people, doing the right thing because it's the right thing. So on Sundays, we do something like that to just help someone because it's the right thing to do.
I love that.
Those are two. No, I've got a bunch of others.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. It's something that I haven't thought of in a mechanical way, you know? We're trying to live our lives and make our children. I think ultimately what, for me, it comes down to is make my children better than me, right? And so to make your children better than you, they can't be worse than you in any one area, right? So that's it. Like, build the foundation of your good strengths into them and then hope that they improve on those strengths in some areas and that they eliminate some of your weaknesses.
Minimize and amplify.
Exactly, exactly. And then when it comes back to the way that we treat our elders, it's crazy because you said something that I didn't think about. When I was thinking about it, I was thinking about how we don't value older people. And it's true.
We don't.
But I never thought about the root cause of it. And I like your idea. You know, it's something I'll have to explore more. But I like your idea that they haven't gone out of their way to engage the younger generations and pass on morals and traditions. We have no traditions. I was just listening to a podcast, the James Altucher show with Jocko Willink, and they were talking about death because he's a Navy SEAL who's had to deal with seeing many of his friends die. And he was saying that in other countries, they have rituals for death where they have a day of this and then a day of that and then a day with all these people doing this, and then you move on. And everyone goes through their ritual, and they know that that's how their grieving process will progress. And then it's over, and then they move on. And it's in the U.S., we don't have anything. People are just trying to come up with stuff. Where he's like, we're a mishmash of cultures, and nothing has ever stuck. So people flounder, they don't get closure, and it leads to mental problems, you know, and difficulties, and the grieving process gets drawn out or never closes, potentially. And I was just thinking about, that's not just that situation, as you're talking. It's not just that situation in death here in the United States. It's just about everything. Because what have we been taught from our elder generation? I mean, if you ask me my opinion about the baby boomer generation, and you're going to hear a bunch of negative stuff.
Yeah, one of our closest friends calls them, if their parents were the great generation, they are the worst generation.
Yeah,
we could go down that.
And I don't want to go down that path. And it's really interesting because when we talk about the individuals that we know from the baby boomer generation who cared for us and loved us, we have a ton of respect for them. But as a whole, I think that their generation, like you said, really fucked a bunch of stuff up. If we're talking about financial or environmental or whatever.
Political.
Well, I don't want to get political. But then on the flip side, it's like imparting morals and wisdom as an individual to younger people that you love is a very important thing. But on the flip side, when we talk about societal norms, there are certain things that get passed down from group to group that are outside of your control as a parent, right? And it's like, it's almost like your generation is a spokesperson for all of its individual members. And through the pop culture, your kids are going to inherit certain messages. And, like you were talking about how in America, we don't embrace extended family. I mean, think about sitcoms. They make sitcoms where the parents, some financial thing has gone wrong, so one of the parents has to live with them.
Yeah.
And it's this big calamity.
It's a baggage.
It's awful, right? It's like this terrible thing. Or the parents live next door and the husband or the wife, if it's the husband's parents, the wife just wants to move into a different house as far away from them as possible,
right?
And flip and vice versa. That's like the message that we give is that, oh man, wouldn't it be awful if you had to have parents live with you? So, I mean, I can understand why we end up in this situation.
Yeah, literally, our culture is one of the fastest growing industries right now is the long-term healthcare industry, creating life communities. They're popping up everywhere. So independent living to assisted living to 24/7 skilled care. Whether it's right or wrong, what do we do when a person reaches an age in the United States? We ship them off. We outsource. We do what we do in the U.S. We outsource the care,
man,
and love. And now there's lots of good people who go visit all the time, and they need to be with true medical professionals. I get that.
But at the end of the day, though, man,
we've set up a culture that says, okay, how old are you? Yeah, let's start looking at homes. I mean, we ship them off.
As if it's a normal thing.
Right. I don't know. So I just, it's sad. My grandparents are all dead. Kizzy's got one grandma left. You know, I hope my parents and Kizzy's parents live a long time so that my kids have time to spend with them, because they're going to, all four parents are going to hear, hey, teach my kids lessons. I want you to pass on wisdom to my kids. They're going to get that from me. So they're going to have to be thinking about it whether they want to or not, because I want – so one of the things I'm doing with my parents – I'd like to do it with hers if they're into it, is I've already started doing audio recordings and just said, tell me about your life, and just get it all recorded. And so then we can at least extract lessons after they're gone. That's been pretty cool. I've learned some things about my parents I didn't know. For instance, my dad had four pet monkeys while he was in Thailand in Vietnam, has names for them, doesn't have a single surviving picture of these monkeys, but he can tell you everything about them. So he had four monkeys and everybody thought he was a weirdo, because obviously he was having four pet monkeys. But yeah, so that was pretty cool to hear about. But I want to go back to something you said a long time ago. Total right, my random brain. Here's where I feel a little bit of stress and I'm pushing back, right? When someone says, hey, so what's your kids involved in? What's Claudia involved in? She's fucking five, man. She's five. What do you mean? What sports is she? Oh, what do you got her signed up for? Like, I get these questions all the time. And it bothers me. So have me and Kizzy signed them up to do things? Well, sure, yeah. You know, we've gotten them swim lessons. That's an important thing. They're going to be around water. That's like a safety thing, and it's fun. Okay, yeah, so they'll take some swim classes. What else have we signed them up for? They're doing some really fun science thing this summer where she gets to build all this stuff, blah, 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 whatever. Seems kind of fun. It's 1 week, 4 hours a day. I signed her up for a chess camp. That's definitely dad, right? Awesome. But for 4 hours, they learn from the grandmasters at Webster University. They're literally the best chess program in the world right now, and they're 1 mile from our house. Half day, though. 1 week. I am specifically not signing them up for organized sports, for organized anything. This, I'm not trying to persuade anyone or do anything. I'm telling you Zach's thoughts, which are only mine. She's five. Her average lifespan, I believe now, is either 78 or 81 for women in the U.S. So she will have 76. So once she gets into kindergarten, it's over. At that point, I know she'll get into organized whatever, sports, arts, music. She's five. She has 75 more years at least, according to the average years, where she will be organized, put into groups with rules, to be told how and when to do things. Let them play. Let them just be themselves is how I think of it. We have our whole life. We're a little ant colony. We're a beehive, constantly organizing ourselves to do things. It's like, when do they just get to play and just do whatever the fuck they want to do if the parent will do it? That's how I viewed it. And when people ask me that, I'm very calm. I'm just like, oh, you know, we're not signing up for anything yet. Once she hits kindergarten, it'll just be natural. We'll have to sign her up. But some of the responses I get are really interesting, as if I'm like my kid's getting behind because I haven't signed them up for some sport while she's 4 and 5 years old. It amazes me.
If anything, I'd say to the contrary, I love the different things that you're getting her involved in, like the science thing and the chess thing. Actually makes me think, wow, I need to do that with Marin.
Marin's a whole year younger.
True. And on the flip side, we are, like I said, Marin has been in swim class, same thing as what you said. But she's going to be in soccer, t-ball, and one other thing. Dance. Now, here's the interesting thing. And maybe this is because we've put these activities in our home and we've instigated these activities with her. But after dinner, we dance. Like, mm-hmm. We have dance time as a family a lot. Not every night, you know.
So there's a ritual, there's a tradition.
Quite a bit, yeah. We've had bats and balls laying around the house ever since they were little. Marin can hit a ball. I can throw a ball, she can hit it. I can throw it, she can catch it. She's getting to the point where she hits it hard enough that she's breaking stuff in the house. So we either need to get softer balls, foam balls. But, you know, also we're going to put her in t-ball. She's interested in, she asks to do it now. And the same thing with soccer. Like, you know, our house, our main floor is like, at this point it's set up where it's a big circle. And she'll just run around and kick a ball, dribble a ball around in a circle and
again,
tell me to steal it and stuff
I
like that.
Wasn't saying that no, for you to have no. to explain why you made
and
your
I get
decision.
That. I get that. No, but what I'm saying is it's interesting because I'm beginning to wonder, like you said with chess, well, that's dad, right? Pushing that into them. I'm beginning to wonder, like, am I – clearly we're going to influence the things that our kids do, you know, regardless of how we did it. I did it. See, I'm thinking, well, I'm justifying the fact that I'm putting her in sports and she's not even 4 years old yet, or she's going to be four here this summer, by saying, well, she chooses to do those activities at home. But those
Why did she choose them? Because you had them in the house.
Exactly.
What did Dave play when he was little? Soccer and baseball.
That's how we set it up. Right. That's how we set up our house.
So that's my point. It doesn't matter what we do. We're going to influence our kids either way. So what I've done for me is I've just embraced, here's how I'm going to parent. When I talk about it, it is not to influence another person, persuade them, judge them, challenge them. It's I'm actually comfortable in the decisions that I'm making, and it's going to look wrong to a lot of people, and I'm okay with that.
What I love about what you're thinking is it's easy as a parent to pass down the things and traditions that you know. It's easy. It's the default.
Right.
Right? By default, I'm going to have her in t-ball and soccer and stuff. Why? Because that's what I did. That's default, right? It's awesome to take the time and stop as a parent and say, how can I expand her, right? So I want to give her a base and stuff, and I want her to relate to the things, the values and the things that I've done, yes. But I want also to expand her mind, and if we're going to make her, quote-unquote, better people than we are, that's necessary. And so I love the idea of them being involved in activities that might be a little different in certain areas than what we did.
I try to think about it like this. So Bart always gets mad at me. I say, I don't care if my kids don't play sports ever, period. I don't. And I was a sports nut. I've evolved. I don't care about sports at all anymore, at all. I enjoy still playing them when I get the opportunity, but in terms of consuming and watching them, ugh, boring, boring activity for me. I don't care if they do, because I try to look at, okay, where is the world going? What could I help guide them to or show them the door? And if they walk through it and enjoy it, great. They can continue to do it. Where's the world going? Not what did I do and what were my interests? Now, having said that, I put a hoop in. Do my kids get out in the driveway and shoot with me? Yeah, of course. If they're like, yeah, I want to play basketball. Well, great. Yeah, we'll do some clinics at the house. It'll be fun. But it'll never be like, hey, you're playing basketball. It will be that way with math and with computer stuff. It's just going to be that way.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. And I'm going to make it as fun and playful. I'm not going to be a drill sergeant about it, but it's happening.
So maybe the whole thing that we're talking about here is, and I want your opinion on this, is just being aware of the choices that you're making as a parent for your children, because you can't not do it. I've heard people say, well, I'm just going to let my kids do what they're interested in. And it's like,
they don't have a philosophy.
Yeah, you build the environment that your children get exposed, of what your children get exposed to.
Here's something. So you mentioned the word menu, a menu of opportunities. I'm going to make two connections. Natalie Bennett, Bart Bennett's sister, softball coach at Belleville East, where we went, extremely successful athlete. I believe she was an alternate for the USA Olympic softball team. She won national championships at Florida State. High-performance athlete. She's won state titles at Belleville East coaching. She is very disappointed in today's culture because parents, she sees, are forcing their kids to choose one sport and pursue one sport to become the best to get the scholarship at the expense of learning some of the other sports, the menu, as you mentioned. We're going to see what they like. They're going to get pushed into those two things no matter what, which are less extracurricular. I view them as the same as knowing how to read. And we'll just see where life takes us. What if we hit the lottery tomorrow? Everything's different. We're going to be traveling the world their whole life.
Well, and choosing what your kid focuses on and how they focus on it. I mean, a couple things. Number one, how do you live your life? Do you pick the one thing you're strongest at and that's all you do your whole life? Because if any time I've tried to do that, it's become an exercise in misery and it's taken the passion out of that one thing for me. A friend of mine that I knew as a kid whose parents made him practice piano for hours and hours at a time, and he didn't have any kind of social life to speak of.
Yes.
And he was forced to study and get the best grades in school and went to a special school where, you know, he was boarded at the special school for gifted kids. And he's socially maladjusted now and not successful.
And not happy.
And not happy. Well, at least I haven't talked to him or heard from him in years, but at least that's the way it was at one point. And who knows if it's all, you know, I'm placing the blame here, but to me, it certainly seems like there's at least some strong correlation between that, the way that he was forced to do those things, and the outcome that came. Now, there are certain people who thrive, right, if you do that. But as a parent, I think you have to understand every person is different, and every child that you have is different. And if you're going to force anything upon them, to me, that's not the right way to do it. I mean, it's like if there's a menu, right? It's not like the restaurant brings you a menu and then goes, you're going to order this one because that's the one you like the best. And then you're going to order it over and over and over. And I need you here to eat it four times a day, right? Because can you imagine if a restaurant did that to you and that was your favorite dish at the beginning? By the end, you'd be like, I hate that restaurant. I never want to go back there. I never want to eat that food ever
again. Unless you make the decision that this is what I want to eat.
Unless you decide that I'm so into that dish, I'm going to go and eat it three times a day. You know what I mean? It's like there's something to be said about free will.
So real quick, I want to talk about if you had one word, Dave, or one word or phrase that you wanted to instill in your kids, that you wanted that value for them to take to the grave. You die, whatever, tomorrow. What is that phrase, value, ideal that you want them to take away?
I'm biased now because I'm looking at the board.
Oh, yeah, there are some key words up there. Right? Okay. Well, I've thought through this, so I'll give you mine. Mine's a two-parter. I'm cheating. Be fulfilled, make impact. Be fulfilled, make impact. So the one thing I want my kids to understand is that they can change the world. And I've thought very specifically about these words. They can change the world. They have the opportunity to influence and shift the entire world in different ways, just like Elon Musk has done, or Mark Zuckerberg, or Mother Teresa. We could name all kinds of people. They can do that. That exists. But they do not have to change the world. And they will never be an expectation to do so, but they will have the ability to believe in themselves that I can make really big global changes if I commit to that, if that's what I want. Or they can change their world, their local world that concerns with their family and their friends and maybe their community. And that's where dad's at. And I've had to accept that. You know what? Moving forward, I'm not going to shift thinking in the world, and that's okay. But my kids can if they want to. And how do they do that? Be fulfilled. Make impact. Pursue your passion, cross-haired with your skills. There's three questions I go back to all the time, Dave. Is what you're doing, whether it's work or just in life, does it make you happy? Does it bring out the best in you? And does it allow you to bring the best out in others? And if any one of those are a no, you shouldn't be doing what you're doing.
Those are three amazing questions. As you were talking through fulfillment and impact, I have to say, like, the thing that came to mind, probably because it's on the board, but fulfillment is it's the number one thing for me with my kids. Impact, I think, is also important. To me, I would place it as impact would probably be able to come as a byproduct of their fulfillment. And then the thing that everyone's striving for, happiness, to me, I think, is a byproduct of those two things and a bunch of other things. But at least those two things are a big part of, you know, what make happiness a byproduct of. And I would say you don't go for happiness, right? You go for fulfillment and impact, and then happiness
occurs.
Is
it's an outcome,
right? And to me, you know, you don't go for impact. You go for fulfillment, and then understand the impact that you want to make with the thing which you are fulfilled. And I love that. I love those questions that you ask, man. And I'm going to try to use that structure when I think about my kids. And
well, I don't just think that's not a kid thing. That's just whenever I'm hearing somebody that's thinking about transitioning jobs, it's often related to professional questions and obstacles, or in coaching situations or talking to people about leadership. Those are just three key questions. Like, I don't care if you're a metal worker or if you're a CEO of a Fortune 100 pharmaceutical company. If you're unhappy on a daily basis, you believe that your job isn't bringing out the best in you, your potential, what you're capable of, and you're not able to bring that out in other people around you, that Zach's opinion is that you could probably be doing something else to enjoy your time on this planet more and make a bigger impact.
And I'm going to practice what we've said, which is to be a good parent, you must first take care of yourself. So if I want my children to be fulfilled, to have an impact, and ultimately have happiness as a result, then I need to focus on that for myself first so that I can be in a state to pass that along, or to attempt to pass
that along. Good parents are selfish, right? Counterintuitive wisdom. Good parents are selfish, but it's structured selfishness. It's not unbridled selfishness. It's purposeful selfishness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Well, I've got a change challenge. This is for your kids, people. And if you don't have kids, do it anyway. And give it to your, if you got siblings that have kids, write it up and give it to them and let them gnaw on it. Write up one page. It can either be narrative, stream of consciousness, or bullet point. I don't care. Draw it on a whiteboard. Visualize it. What is the ideal parent? What is your movie reel, your movie trailer? Imagine a movie about the best parent in the world. Create that movie trailer in your head and then jot it down. And then work to incorporate one or two of the traits that you think about into your life. Because you're not going to get them all. And some will come, you'll do them for a while, and then they'll go away. Then shift to another. But create your ideal parent movie trailer and try to work towards or amplify one of those traits.
I have an exercise that you will have your kids do.
Ooh.
This change challenge, you'll create a sheet, and it will be a sort of a feedback sheet, trying to get some feedback about how you are as a parent from your children, but not by directly asking them, telling them that it's feedback. Tell them to write a story and tell them that daddy or mommy is the main character in this story. And cue up a situation and ask them, what would daddy do in this situation? Write out this story for me.
Man, that's very clinical. That's smart. I love it. That's really good.
I want to do that.
I'm literally going to do that like right after this.
I want to get the insight that I get back from that one. So... yeah, I mean, we did a exercise recently, you know, related to business, Zach and I, because Zach serves as my executive coach. Anyone who's looking for an executive coach, I would say reach out to Zach. But we did a really good exercise that it was feedback from the people that you work with, and it was so powerful. And so that's where I'm getting that from for the kid thing, because I really do think that will be very
interesting.
Powerful.
Whereas adults can just say, here are the key behaviors you need to work on, or here are your key strengths. I like the roundabout way of asking for the story. To be honest, that could be potentially powerful for adults too, but that would just take them longer.
Of course.
And they're a bit busy. Well, any other last thoughts on parenting?
We've touched about a lot on parenting. Ultimately... just my goal, right, is to make my kids a better person than I am. I mean,
yeah,
that's all I got to say. There's so much that goes into that, but we just talked about it for an hour. So
here's a couple just last pieces of advice that you can take or leave. Whenever there's a new parent and they say, what advice do you have? I only say two things. Over-communicate with your spouse to make sure you two are aligned. Don't rely too much on Google. Yeah. People freak themselves out with the kid stuff. We're parents. We're at the top of the food chain on this planet, our species, for a reason. We're resilient. We're built to be resilient. Don't freak out over things.
And I can't end without this. Everything that you do, do it from love. And then you don't have to worry. Like, if you do everything out of a position of love, it's probably the right thing.
Nice. Well, thank you for spending time with us today. We hope you found some value. We hope you maybe took away from some of the mistakes that we've made and some of the decisions that we've made in the past and that we're going to make in the future. And maybe you can make better ones for your kids. So as we say in Life Lab, experiment with life.